The reason you're one of my favorite doctors is because it's refreshing when there's somebody who is still inside of the medical system, who is operating ethically, thinking progressively, and trying, like, meeting people where they are. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the difficult things for you is getting patients who walk in the door and you're like, if you would just open your mind to a different way to live.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, for sure, there's definitely, you know, a lot of people come to me and they want to be fixed, but there's a small percentage of those people that really want to put in the work to fix themselves. And when I see those people, it makes me so happy and excited to be able to connect them with people like yourself and other providers that I know will be able to help them help themselves. Mm-hmm. It's exciting for me because I like to see people take responsibility for their own health. And if they're able to do that, I'm happy to help them connect them with the people who can help them more. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of people don't necessarily want to do that, but mm-hmm. the people who do, I get so excited to treat them. So that's how I try to practice is sort of help educate people and how to help themselves better. And then connect them with the right people.
So if you're an active person in the New York area mm-hmm. and you're looking for a good doctor, throw yourself down the stairs today and then come to Northwell and find Amy West.
That's
not medical advice, by the way.
Let's not throw ourselves down the stairs. But if you're someone who has something that hurts them and you want to do everything in your power to help yourself, I'm happy to help you figure out that journey. So, yeah.
And I can certainly vouch that you've done that a million times on our behalf. Yeah. It's nice to have a, first of all, before I even get into the stuff I really want to talk about, mm-hmm. One of the things I think that you do really well mm-hmm. is the way that somebody from your team reaches out to whoever the referral is.
Yeah, we try to, you know, get people in as soon as we can and connect people and, you know, try to fast track that as best we can. Yeah.
Well, is that unique to you? Or is that within the hospital system that you work for?
I am fortunate that I have a coordinator who helps me with my schedule, and she's great. So she's super involved and really on top of things. And, you know, not every doctor has a coordinator who is as good as mine is. So I'll say that. And, you know, because I know a lot of, you know, physical therapists in the area, people that work with you. So when you reach out to me and say, I have this person that wants to get in, then I have my coordinator reach out to them right away. So, and at least that's how I ideally like it to work.
Well, you make us look like magicians,
You know,
which is great.
Because I know if I'm getting a referral from someone like yourself that, you know what I do well. So you're trying to get me those patients that I can actually help. So then mm-hmm. I'm, you know, eager to try to get them in as best I can. You know?
There's a lot of people who, I wouldn't say a lot of people, but a lot more people than the average person walking the street is seeing mm-hmm. who are coming to me, who I'm like, I believe that is a, we need to go last ditch mm-hmm. and then surgery for you. And those are especially the people who I'm like, mm-hmm. the only person I want you to see is Amy. Because if they go see somebody else, oftentimes it's like, oh, let's just cut. Let's just inject for sure. Like, mm-hmm. so I just want to say publicly so people can hear it that I appreciate that you're the kind of reference that I can make and just have peace of mind about.
Well, I appreciate getting those referrals, and certainly I'm not someone who's anti-surgery by any means.
Neither am I.
But I do find, especially with people who are more active or who are more athletic, or people who are whose goal it is to maintain a certain level of activity beyond maybe what the average person does, there are ways to avoid more invasive procedures, or at least try those things first. Sometimes people aren't given the option, or mm-hmm. they're given an option that's not ideal. You know, I tell people this all the time, as you know, these kind of patients anyway. I said, if you want to do physical therapy, for example, there is your sort of run-of-the-mill physical therapy.
Mill being the operative word.
that's tends to be insurance-based, where you're going to spend 10 minutes with a physical therapist and then the rest of the time icing yourself in the corner with an assistant or doing some kind of weird stretching stuff that maybe isn't great. And, you know, if you're going to spend the time, your time is valuable, and if you're going to spend the time, do it with people who are really going to assess your movement, address the kind of sports specific things, goals that you have, you know, things like that, who are really going to invest their energy in you feeling better. And unfortunately, the way insurance is sort of set up in a lot of physical therapy clinics, it's, you know, they have to turn people over quickly. They have mm-hmm. high volumes, you know, they're sort of trying to treat three different people at once kind of thing. And it's not because they're not good therapists. It's because that's the system that they work in that forces them to have to kind of run things a certain way. So, or they're, you know, clinics that are set up basically to treat, you know, people in their 70s and 80s and, you know, who have sort of different needs than your average athlete. So you're not going to necessarily be able to do certain things at those places. So for me, it's like, if we can connect you with the right people, let's do it. But yeah, so, and like I said, like the traditional physical therapists, there are a lot of great therapists who are just kind of in the system that they can't really think outside the box in. And it's unfortunate, but that's sort of kind of how it is, unfortunately,
in a lot of places, you know. It's the same for a medical doctor oftentimes too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I definitely want to come back and make that a big part of our at least the second half of the discussion.
Sure, absolutely.
Do you find yourself, because you are so physically active, mm-hmm. you're an avid CrossFitter, mm-hmm. you're a competitive weightlifter,
mm-hmm. yeah,
recreationally yeah, competitive.
Yeah.
You own a singlet.
I do. That's, I do. Yeah, that, I do own a singlet. Yeah.
That puts you in a very small percentage
yeah, okay.
of people.
I'll take it.
You're so forward focused for yourself,
mm-hmm.
working in an industry where a lot of the people who operate within it are looking at like, okay, you're sick, let's keep you from dying.
Right.
As compared to, I'll give you the perfect summation.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I saw a traditional medical doctor is mm-hmm. when they told me, everything's great, your blood works within normal ranges. Mm-hmm. I'm like, have you seen what normal looks like?
Yeah.
I don't want to be within normal ranges.
Right.
And so that's like, you operate within that.
Yeah.
Do you feel, is it isolating or is it not what people are thinking from the outside?
You know, I'll say this. It's unique. So I work in an orthopedic setting, and I'll say that a lot of the people around me aren't necessarily people who are active, you know? So for me I treat athletes. So for me to treat athletes well, I feel like I have to understand mm-hmm. what it's like to be an athlete. Right. So, whereas that's not necessarily how other people are thinking. And, you know, I have a lot of friends who end up seeing physicians for this, that, and the other thing. And the providers they're seeing aren't really understanding their goals, because it's like, oh, so what? You can't do 50 chest to bar pull-ups. Your mm-hmm. arm works fine. And it's like, for some of my friends, like, that's not acceptable. They want to be at a level that's above that.
Mm-hmm.
And the providers they're seeing aren't necessarily understanding, like, why would you even want to do that? You know, like, mm-hmm. why does that matter to you? So, you know, things like that where I'm not satisfied with just like being average at anything. So I don't accept that as a provider. I don't accept that as a patient, you know, and like you were saying, like, yeah, so my lab values are normal. I don't want to be normal. I want to be better than that. I don't accept that from myself. So, so that's kind of how I look at treating patients, is that I want them to be like optimized. I want them to be above just like the average, mm-hmm. which is not how traditional medicine works. Because the majority of people are sick. So we're just trying to keep them from not dying, you know, mm-hmm. but there are at least a handful of people that are living well and want to live even better. And it's like, how do we help those people? We should be able to address their needs also.
I think that the more we can address the needs of that population, the more obvious it becomes that that's possible.
Yeah.
And then the more that population drives and inspires the population of people who are on the edge. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe I could, but I don't know.
Right.
And then they say, oh, I can.
Right.
And then I feel like it ends up being a cascade, and eventually we hit a critical mass and people just realize that they are in control of their own health to mm-hmm. a degree. I know that there's.
Yeah. And there's always going to be things that you can't account for. But that being said, you know, starting off at a better baseline will make those unpredictable things less impactful potentially, mm-hmm. you know? And I see this a lot with patients who have, you know, certain people like have a fall and they fall down and script, they need to get back up again. Right. And there's some people have a fall mm-hmm. and it can almost kill them. And, yep. you know, so, you know, how do we get you to a place where these unexpected things don't devastate you, you know? So, that's something that I try to instill in people, you know, when they say, oh, you know, I don't need to learn how to squat or deadlift or any of that stuff. And it's like, well, or like, for example, like Olympic weightlifting is something that, yes, I do on a singlet, but you know, the movement patterns involved in learning how to snatch, whether you're snatching with a barbell or snatching with an empty PVC pipe, in order to coordinate that movement pattern, you know, if someone, an elderly person is able to express that movement pattern, I'm much less worried about them falling, you know, tripping over their own feet and hurting themselves. Right. And it's like, it's not a matter of like doing heavy snatches for time. It's a matter of like learning how to coordinate your body movement such that you're not going to be perturbed by a pebble on the ground. You know,
well, it's what you're describing there is that something like an Olympic lift, like a snatch is more mm-hmm. of an indicator
right.
of capacity mm-hmm. than a necessary exercise that everybody who is aging does.
Right.
It's, I hear it as a placeholder. Mm-hmm. Like snatch, great. You want to do snatches, do snatches.
Yeah.
If you want to do sprinting, mm-hmm. right? Like pick your exercise that requires some coordination. I understand yeah. the difference between a snatch and a sprint. Like right. one's mostly lower body, technically. Uh-huh. But what I'm hearing you say is that populations of people who are able to do things that require more coordination, more skill, more explosiveness, mm-hmm. just watching them even attempt to do it mm-hmm. without the fear, without.
Yeah.
like dying
right.
in the process mm-hmm. indicates that that's someone I'm less likely to have a problem.
Right. Yeah. And it's also, the idea of not having fear around certain movements, mm-hmm. or this idea that like, I'm a certain age, therefore I don't need to know how to do that or I'm not going to be doing this competitively, therefore I shouldn't even learn. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, or even something like a sprint, like we all have to relatively sprint at some point in our life, in mm-hmm. our days, you know, whether that's getting across the street before the light turns green, right? That's a sprint. Or if you're going to be like on a track running, you know, but like you have to be able to accelerate quickly, whatever quickly is for you, and being in training that, whether you're a young person or an old person or you know, whatever. So
it could even be that your pet is about to run out and yeah. grab a bird or something.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't have to, for people who heard what you said, I just want to yeah. make sure that they yeah. understand that there's a long line of things that could require you to take three fast steps.
Exactly. And are you going to fall apart or mm-hmm. be hurting for days as a result of that? Or are you going to do it and not think twice about it?
Well, there's that now viral video, I don't know if you've seen it, of the woman who gets her kid out of the car, they're in the stroller, and the stroller starts rolling towards a busy
road. Oh, I think I have seen, yeah.
And she falls down, yeah. and she can't get up.
Yeah.
And some other person has to run over and stop the stroller from running into oncoming traffic.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah. So, I mean, that stuff like that, and that's sort of a, you know, bit of a, you know, dramatic example of that, but, like, things like that happen on a small scale all day. And mm-hmm. I tell you, all the people I see in my clinic, for the most part, hurt themselves doing things that are very unremarkable. You know, it's like, oh, I bent over to put something in the dishwasher and I sneezed and like, now I can't walk. You know, it's like something like that. It's rarely like I was running from a burning building. You know, it's like, it's mm-hmm. usually something that's fairly, you know, benign, but it's like, you do this every day, you're, you know, squatting down every day incorrectly, eventually it's going to catch up to you or whatever. So.
Well, that's one of those, how do you help people? Let me back up a step. Mm-hmm. The most common thing I hear people say related to that, it's like, oh, this is what happens when you get old. Don't get old. And I'm like, well, beats the alternative.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you respond to something like that with a patient who's coming into your clinic? Because I have to imagine you want to be like, no, I have older patients than you.
Right.
Who don't have this problem.
Right. I hear this sort of sentiment being said a lot with, you know, I just, I have people stand on one leg and you'd be surprised how hard that is for a lot of people that I treat. And they go, yeah, I have bad knees or I have bad balance. And that's just, you know, it's part of getting old. And if you accept that of yourself, like I don't accept that I can't do something so easily. Like I'm not satisfied with just saying like, I'll just never do that thing again. Mm-hmm. So I usually say, are you okay with that? Like you're okay with not just having bad balance, quote unquote, like that's just something that you're okay with. Well, no, but you know, it is part of getting old. I go, well, it's not part of getting old. You know, there are certain things that happen over time, but they don't have to bother you. One, like you can have some degeneration of your joints or your cartilage or, you know, your spine, whatever it is, but it doesn't have to bother you. And you don't have to accept that you can't do things anymore. Like part of it's sort of saying to yourself, like, am I okay with this thing? Mm-hmm. And if you're not okay with it, then what are steps that I can take to change it? And sometimes people are like, oh yeah, like it doesn't have to hurt every time I get up from a chair. You know, right. I would say like, there's a certain age you hit when you start making noises getting out of chairs. And it's like, if that's starting to happen, okay, why? Are you okay with this hurting you every time? It doesn't have to be that way. There are things you can do to change it. So do you want to do those things? And everyone wants to do those things. But
what are some of the things?
Well, you know, very basic level is, you know, is maintaining good metabolic health. So, you know, just maintaining a normal weight or within a normal weight range. Eating well, you know, let's not eat garbage food. Like at the very least, don't eat garbage food.
If you don't avoid food like substances.
Yeah. You know, try to optimize your sleep as best you can. And it's not easy for everybody. And I understand that there's a lot of factors that go into that, but prioritize it. You know,
can I speak to that one for a second?
Yeah.
So the first one, is I imagine, I can't believe we've gotten to a point, I should say, that there's like, you need to hesitate for a moment to avoid how people are going to receive hearing a normal body weight. That's,
oh yeah.
I know it's a thing, but it blows my mind. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to, I don't need to ask you what is a normal body weight. Like that's,
yeah.
Pull out Google.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not anymore, but
yeah, who knows, right?
I mean, listen, the basics that I've seen from when I was a young buck,
yeah,
where 12 to 18% body fat for men, mm-hmm, 18 to 24% body fat for female was considered a normal range.
Yeah.
And you can optimize from there, mm-hmm, but I'm less worried about what you weigh if your body fits within those parameters.
Right, exactly.
But when it comes to, what was the one that you said that I wanted to jump into? Oh, the sleep thing.
Oh, sleep, yeah.
I just had a newborn. Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't. My wife did.
Well, yeah.
And we're 5 weeks into it now.
Yeah.
And I wanted to take the responsibility of doing all of the nighttime stuff so that she could recover.
Good.
Yeah, thanks. I understand that my life is different than somebody else's life, and so I'm not passing judgment onto them.
Right.
If they don't make the same decisions that I do. Mm-hmm. My sleep hasn't been as dysregulated since I had our last kid.
Mm-hmm.
But I changed everything so that I could get in bed at 8:15.
Mm-hmm.
I can be asleep by 8:30.
Sweet.
She puts the kid to bed at 11:15. The baby wakes up, was waking up in the 2 o'clock hour. Now it's the 3 o'clock hour. I get up, I feed him, and then I go back to sleep, and I'm up at 5 to go work out. And I'm not rubping my eyes.
Yeah.
Last night happened to be. Last night was a rough night. My wife set off a car alarm, and it went off, and it woke me up, and I had to jump phone back to sleep. But the point I'm making is this: I had to change some of the things that I would normally enjoy doing at nighttime so that I could go to bed at 8.
Mm-hmm.
And it was important enough to me that I'm not walking around as a zombie all the time.
Yeah.
To do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I hear people's objections, the difficulty of it.
Sure.
And I meet you in the middle and suggest that if you're making that kind of an excuse, if you're validating the behavior, it's because you're more comfortable with whatever life you're living now than with the one that you really want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's priorities, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell people that too. I mean, there's people who you know, they want to get better. They want to do this. They want to lose weight. And I say, okay, well, here's like three things that you can do. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I can't because of this and I can't because of that. And I don't know if I can. Okay, well.
Right.
You know, it's priorities. It's like, for me, for example, working out every day or almost every day is a priority. So like, it's like, so I'm doing mental gymnastics. Like, how can I get my workout in the morning? I wake up a little early, I go to bed, you know, that, cause that's what I'm prioritizing doing. Not everybody does that, and that's okay if you don't want to do that. But, mm-hmm. you know, that's something that I make sure I do because it's important to me. And the same thing with sleep or, you know, with how you're eating. It's like you will very easily, you can make excuses to get out of anything. So, and if that's what you're doing, that's okay, then do it. But mm-hmm. just know that there are consequences to that. And it's all about priorities, you know.
Well, look, I get the consequences because yeah. last night the car alarm went off. Mm-hmm. I was asleep by 9 last mm-hmm. night. Car alarm went off at about 12. Mm-hmm. So 3 hours. The kid's going to wake up in 3 hours. Mm-hmm. I didn't fall back to sleep between the 12 o'clock and the 3 o'clock.
Mm, yep.
So now I'm feeding the kid till 3:45. I go back to bed at 4. I would normally be waking up at 5 to work out. That's 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
I skipped it today.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Yeah.
That is not how I want to live. Mm-hmm. And if I had to do that over and over and over again, I would lose my mind.
Yeah.
So I think that it's poorly understood when you're in it, how much that's affecting you if you've never lived a different way.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, same thing when, you're adjusting people's diet, you know, people start eating, actually eating healthy for the first time. Mm-hmm. And they go, wow, like I feel so much better not eating all this garbage all day. Mm-hmm. But if you don't realize it when you're in it, you don't realize necessarily that it could be better.
Right.
Or sometimes a change at first is very uncomfortable and it's that scary to do. So you don't want to do it. But then once you kind of get into the rhythm of a new way of doing things, you realize, oh, okay, it's actually not that bad. I feel better, you know.
It takes becoming a new person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, especially if it's your social thing. Like if you go mm-hmm. out with, mm-hmm. I saw something recently talking about, you know, mom wine nights. Mm-hmm. How like, maybe we should stop doing that. Maybe it should stop being such a thing, like wine culture amongst mothers.
Yeah, I mean, drinking culture in general is never something I've been super into. So, and I've noticed that too. I have friends whose like their whole kind of everything they do socially revolves around alcohol, mm-hmm. which
is still just, now.
Yeah. And it's never been my thing. But you know, some people really kind of focus a lot of their social time around that. So, you know, and that has its consequences. And you know, when you're 25, you can do that maybe, but by the time you're 35, it's mm-hmm. not, it's a little different. You know,
I have the same bottle of whiskey that I've had in my cabinet for like 2.5 years. Someone got it for me as a gift for helping them. Mm-hmm. I like whiskey.
Yeah.
I just don't like how I feel after whiskey.
I mean, same. Yeah.
I'm talking like 2 drinks. I'm like, that's too much.
Oh yeah. For me, that's always been my thing. It's just not something I necessarily enjoy or joy the way I feel after. So it's like, you know, socially here and there, but but a lot, I think especially as you get older, like that's just not, it's not cute to be binge drinking.
No, it's not a good look.
Yeah.
One of the things that I believe would advance society's ability to live more healthy mm-hmm. would be if the fitness industry raised up in general mm-hmm. and got closer to the medical industry. And I don't mean become medical. I mean speak the language.
Yep.
Understand how to refer a client in your business to the medical industry.
Yeah.
And even specialize mm-hmm. in the way that, like, there's a reason that people don't come to you mm-hmm. for heart murmurs.
Right.
There's a lot going on with the heart. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on the fitness industry breaking into a much more specialized silo? And silo is the wrong word. An integrated system of specialists.
As far as
the benefit to society if we would choose to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I would like to see the fitness and medical spaces work more closely together in a way that's actually effective. Because mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of talk about you know, using exercise as medicine, but how to do that well is not, has not been done yet, or has mm-hmm. not been effectively communicated.
I'll say I think part of the problem with that is that everybody thinks that their exercise is the exercise.
Right.
Yeah. As compared to like, no.
Yeah.
Exercise is pretty good.
Yeah. And there's also just sort of, you know, anytime there's sort of any big kind of policy or, you know, big kind of guideline that's put forth, it's always to me seemingly kind of lowest common denominator, kind of minimal, minimally effective. You know? And medical professionals in general, like, we don't have a lot of training in exercise science or understanding what's effective, what's not. We just tell people to exercise. And then in the fitness space, you know, you send someone to a gym and it's like, God knows what they're doing with whom and how, and mm-hmm. you know, if it's any good. So a way to sort of streamline those things so that they actually work effectively, together would be the ideal situation where you can say, all right, you need to be moving better. You need to be exercising more. This is exactly what you need to be doing. And here's the person who's going to do it. Like, mm-hmm. and being able to streamline that rather than sort of sending people out with very general guidelines and kind of wagging your finger at them and saying, okay, well, exercise more and I'll see you in 6 months. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's one of those, that's where we act. That's where Active Life is aimed to be mm-hmm. the industry leader.
Yeah.
But I also, as much as that's what we want to do, I don't think that everyone in fitness should do it.
Well, no. And you have to have the training to do it. You have to want to do it and you have to know how to do it well, which, there's still, there's a lot of debate as to what that looks like and who's doing well and who isn't. So, I agree. I think people have to have the training and the desire to fill that role, you know?
Well, since we last podcasted together, I went and I spoke at an event, to a bunch of commercial gym owners. Mm-hmm. And I spoke right after Liz Clark, who is mm-hmm. the CEO of URSA. I don't know if you're familiar with URSA or her. Mm-mm. So Liz Clark notoriously was a lobbyist for the confectionery sugar industry during COVID mm-hmm. and helped them to become classified as an essential food.
Great.
Right? Great. She did such a good job at that mm-hmm. that the International Health and Racket Sports Association hired her mm-hmm. to be the CEO of the largest organization of gyms in the world to represent them mm-hmm. to Congress and all these different organizations. Mm-hmm. Fine. Right. I get the angle. Good lobbyist. Get what we want.
Yeah.
But also maybe missing some of the values.
Yeah.
So she spoke at this event right before I spoke at this event. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that was coming up was, why aren't health insurance companies paying for our training? Mm-hmm. And she was like, we're working on it. It should be, and, you know, mm-hmm. whatever.
Yeah.
Fine. I came up next. Mm-hmm. I was like, this wasn't part of my planned talk. And I don't believe it's going to make me any friends, but I won't sleep unless I tell you. Mm-hmm. The reason health insurance isn't paying for your training, besides the fact that health insurance isn't trying to make anybody healthier,
right,
is that it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And I said, and if you want proof, I'll prove it to you and you'll decide for yourself. If the largest influencer in the world was going to come into your business today and have an interaction with one of your coaches and you don't get to decide who it is, you put all their names in a hopper, this influencer spins it around mm-hmm. and they're going to pull out one of the names and stream 2 hours of interacting with this person to the world. Do you want to put your trainers in the hopper? Mm-hmm. Like, raise your hand mm-hmm. if you do, because I want to meet you after this. Nobody raised their hand. I said, so you don't need to keep asking other people to do for you. You need to ask, how do we make our stuff better so that we're undeniable to other people? Mm-hmm. And that's something that I see as one of the biggest problems that plagues the fitness industry mm-hmm. is this sense of, look at all the benefits of exercise. Mm-hmm. That's me. Send people to me. Mm-hmm. Refer to me. Put me on a pedestal. And it's mm-hmm. like, no, you're missing the point. That's exercise in general. Mm-hmm. Now you need to prove that your exercise, mm-hmm. the way that you specifically do it in your specific facility, is more efficacious than the average.
Yeah.
how do people start doing that?
That's a good question. I mean, that's tough because part of it is the results that the patients are getting. So are we getting the results that we want? Are there, measurable, trackable data points that we're tracking that we can say, at point A, this person was here, at point B, this person's here. And do we have the signs that their health is actually better? And then part of it is how do people feel when they leave, mm-hmm. Are people excited about participating in whatever it is again? Are they telling their friends about it? Are they noticing changes in their everyday, that they're, able to do this and that they weren't able to do before? I mean, I think those are the people that I find that are the most successful with it. They are seeing the real life applications of whatever their training, their training consists of. So, whether that's being able to participate, with their kids or, their job requires them moving items around and they're able to do it without thinking twice, things like that. Where people, I can go to the store and walk around and it doesn't bother me anymore, so those kind of things. So setting those goals for people and then getting people to a specific goal, repeatedly, I think is how, at least when I'm thinking about, fitness professionals that I send people to, is like, I think about the results that they've had that are more practical for people, because mm-hmm. no one really cares. It's like, oh, they squat this and now they squat that, right? But it's like, is this person doing more in the world than they were doing before? Are they having less pain when they do it? Are they being more functional on a day-to-day basis? And are they enjoying it? That's another big part of it. Do they like what they're doing?
I feel like we need a data scientist. It's like the last person I want to hire. And probably the person who we need to be able to demonstrate that mm-hmm. what we're doing at Active Life mm-hmm. is what I'm describing right now. But I also think that fortunately or unfortunately, depending on how you look at it, we can only accommodate so many people and we are mm-hmm. a price point that not everybody can afford. Mm-hmm. And I would love to see more of the interest mm-hmm. in becoming the kind of people who can serve an audience of people mm-hmm. who don't fit in the traditional gym today.
Yeah.
Who need more of an on-ramp, if you will, in all walks of mm-hmm. fitness. The one that you and I have the most in common mm-hmm. is CrossFit.
Yep.
And so I may be in a loud minority and I get a lot of shit for it. Mm-hmm. From both sides, by the way, which mm-hmm. is so interesting. Mm-hmm. I believe that CrossFit as a methodology and a infrastructure of owners and coaches mm-hmm. maybe has more opportunity than anybody else mm-hmm. because you walk into a CrossFit gym, mm-hmm. it's generally going to be a lot of space. Yeah. It's not going to be a lot of machines that you get to sit on and that don't emulate life. Mm-hmm. A really well-run CrossFit gym with highly educated CrossFit coaches mm-hmm. is like an oasis in the desert.
Yeah.
Both for the local market and I think, unfortunately, for the CrossFit industry, like mm-hmm. whatever we want to call it, the market.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think keeps people from going to CrossFit gyms, mm-hmm. in fact, I know keeps people from going to CrossFit gyms, is I don't think I can do it. I'm afraid to get hurt. Mm-hmm. Those are the two big ones that I hear. Mm-hmm. I know you can't speak for CrossFit.
True.
Right?
Yeah.
We'll try and get Don, the CEO, out here sometime. Yeah. But I feel like one of the reasons that they're not getting traction amongst the everyday person to stop believing that is mm-hmm. because they keep saying people don't get hurt doing it. And people are like, I have eyes. Mm-hmm. I have friends. Mm-hmm. They maybe didn't tear an ACL or break a leg or dislocate a shoulder, mm-hmm. but his knees hurt now. His back hurts now. Mm. His shoulder hurts now.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts about that. Well, I'd say this, that as far as the injury rates are concerned in the literature, but also just anecdotally, I can say that it's much less than what people think. Mm-hmm. So,
I agree with that.
So the injury rates definitely when we're talking about serious injuries, but even just sort of, lesser injuries. Well, the injury rate in CrossFit and all the studies is roughly between 2 to 4 per 1,000 training hours, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at something like running, can have a injury rate of like 12 per 1,000 training hours, right? So all that to say that it's actually not dangerous in the sense, you know, that we're seeing these huge injury rates just across the board. So that's one piece of it. Two, people who say, oh, I have a friend who injured themselves doing it or whatever. I look at that, I say, well, whenever someone says that to me, I say, well, what happened? Like, you know, so, mm-hmm. And sometimes there are different things that contribute to people getting injured, and it's not necessarily the exercising. It's, you know, accidents happen, one, that happens, but also, you know, were they trying to do something maybe they shouldn't have been doing, or, you know, being a bit aggressive with whatever their weight was or their skill or whatever. But also I look at that in some ways as, you know, people are moving their bodies for the first time in ways that they haven't before. And I don't look at that as a bad thing. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I was teaching myself how to do pullovers the other day. So pulling my body above a bar, you know, mm-hmm. right. And, you know, I'm
my feet first.
Yeah. So kind of flipping over a bar. And as an adult person, for me to acquire new movement skill is actually pretty cool, you know? Mm-hmm. And I look at the things people are doing in CrossFit, some of them are these new movement skills that allow people to move their bodies in new different ways. And there's risk with that. That being said, I think it's a risk worth taking. Mm-hmm. Learning new physical skills protects cognition long term as well. So we find that with, you know,
it's like dancing.
Yeah. So being able to move your body in different ways is actually something that helps you prevent neurodegenerative disease, neurocognitive disease later on in life. So I think that's an important thing to look at. And that also, ultimately, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that are occurring in a CrossFit gym are representations of functional movements, which we're doing every day anyway. So, you know, I see in clinic all the time people injuring themselves doing very benign things, but they're based in movement patterns that they don't do well. So mm-hmm. like squatting or like a deadlift, for example. So yeah, if you do a lot of deadlifts for time, there's a chance you might hurt your back, but there's also a really good chance you're going to hurt yourself bending over to pick something up that you've left on the ground. Mm-hmm. So I think it's better to have people be training that in a CrossFit setting and learning how to do it well, rather than they just go about picking stuff up any old way, in their daily life. So it's a give and take. And certainly, you know, you can sit on the couch all day and you probably won't hurt yourself, but mm-hmm. you're going to be a metabolic mess and you're mm-hmm. going to have the problems associated with being sedentary. And I'd much rather take the risk of someone hurting themselves, and I'm saying that in quotations, at a CrossFit gym than, you know, sitting around all day doing nothing because they're afraid of injuring themselves. I look at problems with, you know, CrossFit injuries as problems of fitness, which we are very fortunate to have as a medical field.
What do you mean by problems of fitness?
So if our biggest problem in my clinic, if my biggest problem is seeing people who injure themselves exercising too much, right. like, that's a good problem to have, you know? Whereas mm-hmm. I see far more people that have chronic musculoskeletal conditions from not moving enough.
Right.
So, you know, certainly we want to be safe. We want to be smart about how we're doing. We want to have, you know, good trainers. And that being said, there are CrossFit coaches that I know who are far more knowledgeable about movement than physicians that I work with. Mm-hmm. Far more. Can tell you how, you know, far more about how people move, more than people that have my same exact job. So I'm telling you that right now, and I'm dead ass. Like that's mm-hmm. So you want to move well. You want to be around, you know, coaches obviously who are being smart about things. You know, don't be an idiot about stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, but I think we are far better off encouraging people to CrossFit than to be telling people not to, and to be, you know, worried about certain kinds of injuries, which ultimately don't actually happen all that often. And then also when we're looking at like something like running, and people recommend running all the time. That's that's continuous movement patterns in one plane of motion. Mm-hmm. And something will break down when you do that. So how do we get people, you know, cross training more? How do we get people doing resistance training more? How do we get people weightlifting more? We're as a medical field, we're all like hopped up on these terms. And it's like, guess what? We figured that out a while ago. CrossFit has been doing that for a long time. Right. You know, like, so it's like now people are trying to catch on to the idea. And then, you know, when we look at things like, you know, breaking down the elements of CrossFit, which, you know, the constantly varied functional movement, high intensity, you break down all of those things. And there's tons of evidence in each one of those principles that show that those things are good for people, especially high intensity exercise, which was for a while was very much like, oh, we can't do that. Now it's being shown that it's useful in all kinds of populations, including people with heart disease and heart failure and diabetes and obesity. It's like, oh yeah, high intensity is a good thing. It's like, oh, yeah, we knew that, you know? So I think actually a lot of the science is catching up to it. So when people talk about CrossFit injury rates, it's like, or like injuries or, you know, worrying about that. It's like, if you're moving your body in a new way or moving it more often than you were before, then yeah, you might, you know, hurt your shoulder, or you might get some overuse injury, but we can deal with that. And I would encourage people to keep being active in that setting. But like going back to my pullover story, I mean, I was teaching myself how to do that. And I've, you know, again, on my own. So it's not a programming issue or anything. And like after a while, I realized I was like gripping the bar too tight, and I got like basically a medial epicondylitis as a result. And it's annoying. And I'm like, you know. So technically, I got injured,
right,
doing CrossFit. But A, I was doing something on my own, unsupervised, just kind of figuring out something on my own. And B, it's like, well, yeah, I got a medial epicondylitis, but I was doing something I never even would have thought to do before. So yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And actually, the injuries, I'll argue that CrossFit prevents more injuries than it causes. Because it prepares your body, you know, in certain ways that is more likely to prevent injury ultimately in the long term by being stronger, by being more functional, but, you know, all those things. So I would almost say it does the opposite in certain settings.
It's what you're describing on that one is you would need a huge study to evaluate the opportunity cost of not. But what you're effectively saying is the person who fell down and didn't break their arm. Mm-hmm. Because they were stronger and had a little bit more dexterity and was athletic enough to stop their fall because they've been doing burpees or whatever you want to.
Yeah.
Is not measured.
Right.
And so the aggregate is a negative figure.
Yeah.
The reason I wanted to talk to you about this topic is because I think the fear of injury in a CrossFit gym is overblown.
Mm-hmm.
And the acknowledgement of injury in a CrossFit gym is under accepted.
Yeah.
And I think the part of the problem is A, how the word injury is defined, right? And B, what is acceptable, which we can get to in a second, and C, what caused it.
Yep.
So the reason why, for people who are totally unfamiliar with this kind of content, the reason why running would be a reasonable thing would cause more injuries than CrossFit is because it's the same thing done over and over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And most people don't know how to do it. Yep. Like if you took your shoes off and went for a run, you'd use a totally different technique than with shoes on, which means the only reason you're able to do what you're doing is because you have a support device that's keeping you safe from normal running gait.
Mm-hmm.
It would be akin to somebody walking into a CrossFit gym and putting their back brace on or their you know, their weight belt to do everything.
Right.
That's an aside.
Yeah.
I agree with you that I'd rather see people getting hurt, exerting themselves and trying to improve than not try to improve and thereby avoid injury.
Yeah.
No pushback there. I'm curious where let me back up a step. The reason I think it's useful to have the conversation around what's actually happening in there as far as like, what is the real injury risk and what is an injury that we can expect is because I think that it brings down somebody's alarm bells about being fearful around feeling as if maybe they're trying to hide something from me. They're not telling me the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm watching it right now.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to have this discussion.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the things I got into recently is I made a post and it was about the woman who was like 90 something years old in a mm-hmm. CrossFit gym.
Okay.
And I was saying, I owned 3 CrossFit gyms.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that this kind of content makes it harder for CrossFit gyms to be successful and actually makes it harder for this person to ever find their way in.
Okay.
Because I opened my gyms because I was attracted to Forging Elite Fitness.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. like, we are excellent at what we do.
Right.
And we get people super fit. And it might not be for you if that's not what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And Patricia Ripley, mm-hmm. at the time 64 years old, walked in and became a member. I wasn't looking for her.
Yeah.
But she came and she got results.
Mm-hmm.
When you start aiming for that person, I think it actually becomes harder to find them because you can't serve the people who are in the gym as well.
Yeah.
So I made a post about this.
Mm-hmm.
I got, like, it was like a dogfight in my comments section.
I bet, yeah.
And one of the people who spearheaded it mm-hmm. was, I don't know if you know John Woolley.
I do know John, yeah.
Yeah. So he just went and torched me on his own channel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay, I can handle this.
Yeah.
And one of the things I talked about in the post was the idea that one of the things that attracted me to CrossFit was like turning 7s into 10s, like that
yeah.
ad campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And he posted it and he was like, this was misogynist and this and this and this. And I'm like, okay. I'm going to stay out of
yeah.
that with you.
Yeah.
But it's like, that woman isn't going to be able to walk into a gym and do Fran.
Mm-hmm.
Like other CrossFitters are. At least right. I don't think that she is.
Right.
And she's going to need more one-on-one attention.
Mm-hmm.
And if she doesn't get the one, the reason for that is her risk of injury is higher if she doesn't get it.
Okay.
That's my position.
Okay.
Every time that guy makes a post, and I ask you to defend him, that talks about like being hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that get hundreds of thousands of likes, shares, comments.
Mm-hmm.
And my contention is that that's because they're the most relatable.
Okay.
I think that there's this like, there's this, the line between sport and method
mm-hmm.
that makes that okay for some people.
Yeah.
Blurs the reality of what happens in a regular class, if you mm-hmm. will.
Yeah.
But also isn't accounted for in the data that you described.
Yeah. So, okay. So there's a lot to unpack there. So I'll say this. Part of the reason that I think any time that the injury thing comes up when in relation to CrossFit, people get very defensive about it because as a community, we were put on the defensive
NSCA.
By the powers that be, right? Mm-hmm. So A, it's a lot of dispelling myths of like, this is not true. This thing was made up. This is not what's happening. So I think right away people's reaction is to say, wait a second, that's wrong. So, right. So, but all these conversations are nuanced and a lot of times the nuance gets kind of lost mm-hmm. with anything on the internet, right? It's like, just goes out there. Yeah. You know, people are like absolute, you know, about this or that. And I think there are a lot of gyms that are able to, the beauty of CrossFit is that yes, we all can be doing the same workout. It just looks different for each one of us, mm-hmm. but we all have the same stimulus and it's accessible to everyone. It's most, in my opinion, one of the most accessible forms of sport, you mm-hmm. know, if you will. So that is something that is possible. So yes, there are, and then there's the line between sport and methodology, which obviously the CrossFit games, I think a lot of people see the CrossFit games and say, that's what your CrossFit gym is. And therefore I can't do it. And there's been a lot of intention to sort of say that is one thing, but what happens in the affiliate is a different thing. Mm-hmm. What happens on a day-to-day basis is the other thing. So that is, there's just a lot of knee-jerk reactions to when someone sort of treads on that.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think, you know, because each gym has its own community and its own kind of vibe, you know, there are gyms where, I mean, on a weekly basis, I can go to 3 different CrossFit gyms and they're very different from one another.
Oh, yeah.
As far as the communities they serve, the kind of workouts they do. You know, one of the gyms I go to is primarily older people. Workouts are a lot easier. It's a much different vibe. And then I'm training 3 times a week with, you know, sort of competitors and we're doing like 2-3 hours of training. Mm-hmm. So, and they both call themselves CrossFit and they both are CrossFit. And like, that's sort of the good and bad of it, is that they can be very different from one another and serve different communities, but still have the same underlying methodology, which is for everybody. It's for that 7-year-old lady. It's for elite athletes as well. It's like how that's expressed, though, is really gym dependent. And I think, I know John owns an affiliate, and what his affiliate does is probably very different than what other affiliates do. But it's, you know, I think that's part of it, is that people see, well, in my gym, we have 7-year-old ladies here, and they're not getting injured, and they're having a great time, and they love it. And that's very possible. And there's other gyms where that just wouldn't work, you know? So, but it, if with the right attention paid to it, I think it can work.
Sure.
But you have to have the things in place where people are have enough attention provided to them and all that. So
that's exactly where I sit.
Okay.
Like, right. So like, for example, I've never met her. Mm-hmm. We had one brief Zoom call, mm-hmm. but Nicole Christensen at CrossFit Roots.
Okay.
I would feel confident sending anybody there. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter. I would just feel like she's going to greet them
right.
with where, like, what they need, and they're going to serve them in an effective way.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I have almost no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. I also think she'd be responsible enough to say, I don't think that we can help you. You need to start here. Mm-hmm. I don't see that everywhere. Mm-hmm. In fact, I see that much more rarely.
Okay.
And one of the things that I see, like in the CrossFit community in particular, there are places that have classes for people of older age.
Mm-hmm.
I'll refer you there all day if you're older. Mm-hmm. Right? I'll even refer you there if you're younger and hurt, because they're obviating through their actions, kind of like a snatch indicates we're less worried about this person.
Yeah.
They understand that these people's needs are different.
Yeah, okay.
But do you think that there's a, let's go back a step. Mm-hmm. What do you think is being described as an injury?
When
the words are.
So when we talk about it from like a literature standpoint, I think that even can get a little waffly, but usually it's something that a lot of the studies use a metric of, you know, something that happened during a CrossFit class that caused discomfort or pain or mm-hmm. swelling that led to you missing time from activity.
Okay.
So that's usually how they mean it, or sometimes they'll use that and or cause you to seek medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll kind of throw that. And that's usually the general definition that's being used. Sometimes in the literature, though, and that's where some of this data can get a little waffly as far as over exaggerating, they'll say anything that caused you to be sore.
Well, that's
sore ridiculous. for more than a day or something like that. And then you can really inflate.
Is that what NSCA did?
There was one paper, I believe it was an ACSM study, where they used something like soreness as an injury.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And you know, and so yeah, if you put that down, you know, you're gonna see inflated levels. So, but you know, so certain most of the studies use the first criteria I was talking about, but sometimes
something happened while you were doing it.
Yeah,
that led you to seek medical attention.
Seek medical attention, and or missed time from being either in CrossFit or other activities. You know, and sometimes they'll even put a parameter on that saying like more than 3 days mm-hmm. or something like that. But in general, that's the parameter that they use. So, but yeah, and that even with looking at injuries and injury rates, you have to say, well, what are they counting as an injury? Because that can also change the data. But also when looking at CrossFit injury rates, sometimes instead of getting kind of like caught up in the actual numbers, it's like looking at in comparison to other things, when you extrapolate out, you see that it's like actually on the lower end of most activities, or like very much kind of with average.
Right. You know. In general, that's an area I'm actually torn on. I'm not sure it's a good idea to compare it to other things, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because in some regard, it's saying like, look, you don't feel at danger going for a run, right?
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't feel danger here either, then, which is a reasonable argument.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, you have to then be saying that these things are dangerous,
mm-hmm.
which I think people are just like, running's not dangerous, and they dismiss the whole conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you have to sort of know who you're speaking with, but I think when I sort of talk about it, like with other medical professionals, for example,
mm-hmm.
And I can
that's
say,
different,
and I can say like, well, actually, when you think running safe, quote unquote,
right.
You know, and then we talk about like the word dangerous in and of itself is kind of a
It's the wrong word.
It's the wrong word, right? And I think like one of Greg Glassman's comments about, you know, the risk of any activity, you know, the fitness comes at the risk of like orthopedic calamity or something mm-hmm. something to that effect, you know. But you go, yeah, so there's always gonna be some there might be some discomfort along the way. There may be some things that are really hard. There might be some injuries along the way, but it's a seesaw. It's a risk benefit, you know.
Well, that, you know, I feel like that's, I think that there's two things going on at the same time. Mm-hmm. One is, for people who don't know, there was not a class action. It was a big lawsuit that mm-hmm. NSCA mm-hmm. Fabricated information about mm-hmm. the injury rates in CrossFit, and yeah. CrossFit won in a wash. Like it wasn't.
Oh yeah, it
wasn't
like
close.
Really
it was,
pretty egregious stuff
yes.
that they did.
It was nefarious.
So, yeah.
So that's point A.
Yeah.
And I think that what that does, because I was in the CrossFit world for so long, mm-hmm. and I've been out of it now for almost the same amount of time. Mm-hmm. And when you're in it, it's easy to think that like this is the whole world.
Right.
This is everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that becomes this whole like the internal mechanism is fighting against this legitimate problem.
Yeah.
Trying to battle it down. Mm-hmm. But my mom doesn't know anything about that. She's right. using the eye test.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of the eye test is wrong.
Yeah.
Like there are things that look dangerous that aren't.
Right.
And some of the eye test is probably right. Mm-hmm. And then it just becomes like, that's where the nuanced conversation needs to come in, where it's like, well, look, you might end up with some elbow tendinopathy mm-hmm. because you're trying something new. Mm-hmm. Would you rather never try something new?
Right.
Because the risk of you trying something new there is actually not higher than you trying something new in your Zumba class. Mm-hmm. It's just your perception of it because of the intensity and the load.
Yeah, and I do also think there is a fear of intensity. There's a fear mm-hmm. of
for sure.
And you know, I don't know if you've seen another like these videos going around the internet of like, it'll say like middle-aged white men are trying to avoid a barbell at any cost,
yeah,
and it's
it.
Like these like you know, this woman around bouncing.
They're in a harness.
Yeah, like harness, or like there's one where people are like hitting a ball with like drumsticks or something, and you know, and of course people are like, well, why are, you know, these women are exercising? Why are we, you know, why are we, you know, saying bad things about it? And it's like, yes, if your option is sitting on the couch, or running around on a harness and bouncing a ball around and with those drumsticks, then do the thing with the drumsticks. Mm-hmm. Like, great. And I think it's great that they're out of their house, they're off the couch, and they're doing that. And we should applaud that, yes. But at the same time, we have to be honest about how effective this thing is going to be.
Yeah, it's too low of a standard.
Right. And it's like, we also have to be real, because I see it as a provider when that person comes in and says, I'm trying to lose weight, and I, you know, I exercise every day, and I'm not losing any weight. It's like, well, what are you doing? Oh, you're strapped from the ceiling.
I'm
and you're
harness.
Yeah, I'm bouncing a ball around with a drumstick. Like, yeah, well, yeah. So, and as a doctor, that's really frustrating when someone's like, but I do everything you're telling me to do and it's not working. And I go, right. What you're doing is not, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, or, you know, and I think a lot of us who kind of came into CrossFit all said, I'm in good shape.
Yep.
I'm an athlete. I know what I'm doing. And then you realize you're not.
That's right. That's why I opened one.
Right. Exactly.
I got humbled.
So I think part of the conversation too is like saying like we have to be real with like how effective other things are mm-hmm. and have to say, okay, like there is going to be a little bit more of some risk here because you're going to be moving your body in different ways, but you have to do it. If mm-hmm. you really want to be fit, if you really want to change, you really want to move the needle or don't, you know what? Strap yourself to a harness and bounce around the room and you probably won't hurt yourself, but you know, like that's just not like we have to be real with like how effective those things are. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people who I've gotten into CrossFit, you know, for the most part are like, oh my God, like this is so like they get kind of hooked on the like, oh, I'm learning how to do new stuff. And I never like thought I could do a pull up and like, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm lifting barbell, like, you know, and they get really excited by it. Cause for the first time in their life, they're actually like pushing themselves into a place that they've never been or doing new things for themselves. So, and that's really exciting to see when people do it. So yes, it can seem scary to people. And part of it's like, okay, but what you're doing now, or like going to a conventional gym and sitting on a bunch of machines mm-hmm. for hours on end.
Those are physical therapy machines that were turned into
yeah.
Bodybuilding.
Yeah. So, and for most people, especially in those settings when they're kind of self-directed and they really don't have much of a plan, they're like, yeah, I spend 2 hours in the gym every day. Well, what are you doing? I'm sitting on a machine and then I'm going to that machine and then I'm going to that machine and I look the same. What's going on? Right. You know, I go, well.
No, I'm with you there. I think that if I was to point to something that I think we would probably have common ground on this, we have common ground on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
I think more people should feel comfortable to try CrossFit.
Yeah.
Like if you're walking in without an orthopedic issue.
Yeah.
I'm for it.
Yeah.
And even sometimes with it, as long as you're conscious and so are the coaches in the building, but then there's some research that needs to be done.
Yeah.
I think that part of the reason why the data that you're suggesting shows low injury rates in CrossFit is a lot to do with the definition of injury that they're using. And I'll tell you why.
Mm-hmm.
I've hurt myself in Muay Thai. I've hurt myself in jiu-jitsu. I've hurt myself playing baseball. I've hurt myself, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've hurt myself in a CrossFit gym.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never missed the next day as a result of hurting myself.
Mm-hmm.
I just changed what I did.
Yep.
I didn't go to a doctor either.
Because
I'm like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
It's going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't classify as an injury in the standards that you were just describing, right? Like if I get that elbow tendinopathy and the next day I'm in the gym and I'm just like, I'm just not going to do any pulling stuff. I didn't get injured. But now I'm complaining about my nagging elbow thing if I'm a complainer.
Yeah.
And I got that in the CrossFit gym.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the conflation that people make is they're thinking catastrophic injury. They're thinking like breaks, tears.
Yep.
Blowing things out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When the reality is you might end up with some tendinopathy stuff because there's not a lot of eccentric load built into the program design in most places. And there's a lot of repetition.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think the topic of injury inside of a CrossFit gym is either getting misrepresented or misunderstood.
Okay.
And I think that I think that's what most people are thinking about when they're talking about it.
Okay. I mean, I would say then how meaningful is that injury if it's not one of the things that we're talking about, you know?
That's where the nuance comes in.
You know, like, are we saying it's like, if it's, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is like, if it's not significantly impacting your ability to perform your job or participate in your life or do a workout, then it's called being human.
Well, to be clear, I'm saying do it anyway. I'm here agreeing with you. Do it anyway.
So, I mean, I'm saying is it anything worth reporting is what, you know, what I'm getting at. Because you're going to be sore, right? You're going to have some this and that thing's going to, you know, but I think if we're going to say like, oh, well, that's an injury too, and therefore it's more dangerous than we think, or, you know, is it? I don't know.
Well, I think dangerous is a word that makes it unreasonable to discuss because it's not dangerous.
Right.
And then when it comes to the other stuff, I think it's just like, it's meeting people where they are better, I think, by acknowledging like, look, you're, it's not uncommon for people to run into aches and pains from doing this that would be just as common doing anything that pushes you.
Yeah.
And if you don't do something that pushes you, nothing's going to change.
Right.
And so if you want something to change, you're exposing yourself to the risk of aches and pains, even the likelihood of aches and pains.
Mm-hmm.
But would you rather the alternative? And that's where I think they would have a really solid, like,
I mean, I think that's exactly the message that needs to be sent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's this balance of being okay with some discomfort.
Totally.
And in order to make progress and accepting that that might happen, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that's totally reasonable. And I think that's the message that I think should be out there. But I think there's sort of this idea, and it's not like a no pain, no gain kind of thing. I think that it quickly turns into that if you're not careful about how it comes across.
Sure.
But it's but saying to people that, yeah, there's, you know, what is the alternative, right?
Like, totally.
Yeah, and are you okay with that again?
Well, to spin this from CrossFit, one of the things that you and I both know relates to pain is metabolic health.
Mm-hmm.
That's less, and that's much less considered when it comes to other stuff.
Right.
And to give CrossFit credit where it's due,
mm-hmm.
part of CrossFit that people don't ever pay attention to mm-hmm. is what Greg Glassman wrote as the 100 words of defining fitness.
Yeah.
Which was basically a nutrition summary.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're eating whole foods and omnivorous diet in reasonable quantities, your metabolic health is going to be better, even if you don't exercise at all.
Right.
Can you talk to people about how metabolic health influences joint, tendon, soft tissue pain?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we have seen, what I've seen in my clinic, for example, is that, you know, just because your X-ray or your MRI shows a certain pathology, it doesn't necessarily correlate to how it affects you. Right. So, and a lot of things go into that, but one of the main things that I see and that has been shown is that people who are in better metabolic health do better with certain kinds of pathologies than other people. For example, like something like knee arthritis. I have a patient. She owns a CrossFit gym. I talk about it all the time, so she's cool with me talking about her. But you know, she came in and said, I can't really like do as many box jumps as I want to do. And like, I can't really like do as many pull-ups as I want to. And I x-rayed her shoulders and her knees, and they were some of the worst shoulders and knees I've ever seen in my life. I was like, I don't, like, as far as cartilage, like no cartilage left in either one.
And how old is this person?
In her 50s.
Okay.
You know, but I was like, I don't know how you're still walking. Mm-hmm. Forget about box jumping, you know, like, or hanging from a bar. I don't even know if you move your arm. I mean, like, it was insane. And, you know, part of the reason that she wasn't feeling the effects of that had to do with, A, how strong she was, but also how metabolically healthy she was. So when it comes to arthritis, for example, you know, the having elevated blood glucose, for example, or metabolic syndrome can lead to increased inflammatory cytokines in your body, which amplify pain signals, which also cause further breakdown of tissue, more, you know, bone spurring and, you know, things like that. When it comes to tendinopathies, you know, if you have elevated blood glucose or just poor metabolic health in general, the ability for your tendons, A, to heal well is impaired, but also you get sort of tendon disorganization, the essentially like collagen and tendon disorganization. So this makes the tendons A, more friable, and also less likely to heal well. So if you find, you know, people who have chronic tendinopathies from doing pretty minor exercise, and then they don't heal as well because the milieu in which their tendons are sitting is, you know, not ideal. You get this impaired healing, and then also increased pain signals. So it all feeds into itself. So, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about how metabolic health affects like psychiatric disorders and sort of the same sort of pathway through mitochondrial dysfunction. Same thing happens in our musculoskeletal tissue as well. And then also the transference of pain. And then, you know, obviously if you're having more pain, people get more depressed. That further impairs their ability to move and to participate in things, and then they become more frail, and it's sort of like the cycle that feeds itself. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's something that's super important to think about. You know, when I see patients who have had, you know, who have a lot of arthritis burden or just like lumbar spine disease and things like that, it's like, well, in addition to the things that I can do, like an injection and, you know, physical therapy, it's like optimizing your metabolic health will help a great deal in helping you feel less pain and be more functional, you know, or at least set you up better if you're going to end up having surgery, that you'll do better after that surgery. So it's super important to look at those factors as well when talking about pain.
I have to take you back there because I need you to explain to people why this is not necessarily the case.
Why? What is not the case?
I'm going to tell you.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Your patient and friend
yeah.
who owns a CrossFit gym,
yeah.
who has some of the worst arthritis you've ever seen.
Yeah.
I need to be really clear.
Yeah.
I'm not saying CrossFit caused that.
No.
I imagine there are people who heard that though and were
No, so So she's got osteoarthritis and she's had things that happened to those joints in the past that not CrossFit related.
Previous injuries.
Yeah, prior injuries.
That ball laying down.
Yeah, so, I mean, she, you know, before she on CrossFit, obviously a very athletic person and mm-hmm. super active and had some injuries to those yep. joints that made her more likely to develop arthritis later and at somewhat of a younger age. So, yeah, so those things occurred, you know, that sort of process was in motion.
Right.
But the fact that she was even doing anything. I mean, honestly, I see people with arthritis that looks half as bad who are like completely debilitated. So mm-hmm. it was, to me, like one of the most remarkable things I'd ever seen as far as just goes to show you like this stuff works, like, right. you know, and
the reason I wanted to bring it back yeah. is because I didn't want to leave that stone unturned for people.
Oh yeah. 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 No. So yeah, that was sort of a separate issue. But, and I also have a fair amount of patients because I'm, you know, I work a lot within the CrossFit space, so I do get lots of patients who get sort of referred who have, you know, X, Y, or Z, and they'll say, like, the only time I feel good is when I'm in the gym, but my doctor's telling me not to go back to the gym because I have this back issue or I have this knee issue, and it's like, that's the only thing that makes me feel good. And I'm like, well, then great.
Right.
Like, then keep doing that because that's actually what's preventing this from hurting you more.
Some of the you know? Posts that we make that mm-hmm. are the best at converting followers to clients mm-hmm. is when we say things like, if exercise makes it feel better, mm-hmm. rest is probably not your solution.
Yeah.
And it's so logical. Mm-hmm. And then the caption, obviously, you have to explain like
right.
all of that. But how often do you find yourself having to educate people on stuff like how tendons work? So for example, if they said something like, yeah. when I use it, the tendon feels better. But mm-hmm. When I don't use it, it's terrible. And they told me not to use it. Like,
yeah. Well, I mean, I think I do get a fair amount of, you know, if it hurts, don't move it kind of idea.
Right.
And having to tell people that sometimes that's the worst thing you could be doing.
Right.
And then not to mention, like, well, the tendon's one thing, but then the joint's the other. So then the joint's going to get stiff. Mm-hmm. You don't move that. And I'll sell those people a fair amount. They'll say like the back issue or knee issue. And they'll say, yeah, like when I squat, it hurts. And I'll say, well, squatting the right way will actually help this. Squatting mm-hmm. the wrong way will make it worse. So I'm not telling you not to squat, but I'm telling you got to do it the right way. And you have to work with somebody who's going to teach you how to do that
yep.
or stop you at a range of motion. That's, you know, that'll work for you in this situation. But there's like a lot of people who can't necessarily see that, like, okay, this thing, it hurts when I do this, therefore I'll just never do that thing again. I'm like, no. Like, let's rethink how this works. But yeah, I do spend a fair amount of time explaining to people, especially like I talk a lot about butts, like gluteal strength. I spend mm-hmm. a lot of time talking about the glutes and how those work and why those are important and how you activate them mm-hmm. that they, you know, people often forget about them. So, but yeah, I do.
The thing that's fascinating to me about all of this is just the idea that whether it's CrossFit, mm-hmm. martial arts, mm-hmm. Running, it doesn't matter. The more that we fear them mm-hmm. and avoid doing them, the more likely we actually become to getting hurt
right.
in the process of doing them.
Right.
And the less likely we are to be resilient to anything else. Because I think that there's also a psychological component of like, wait a minute, if you're that afraid mm-hmm. of exercise, how much anxiety are you walking around with
yeah.
about your body every day?
Yeah.
And I think it's the nutritional component of metabolic health that leads to less pain is mm-hmm. fascinating. I also find the mental mm-hmm. component of pain to be fascinating.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how you help people with that. And I'll give mm-hmm. you kind of a simple scenario.
Yep.
One of the things that we tell people is we have four simple rules about pain. Mm-hmm. First of all, we define pain as the negative emotional response to irritation.
Okay.
You felt something, you didn't like it. Mm-hmm. That's pain.
Yeah.
Because if you're laying on a massage table and someone's massaging you and you're like, oh, they yeah. said, you want me to stop? No, yeah. it's good. I need that.
Yeah.
You don't classify that as pain.
Yeah.
We classify an injury as the decision to stop doing something, mm-hmm. whatever it is. So people can take that, leave that, whatever you want. Mm-hmm. But irritation mm-hmm. is necessary to drive adaptation.
Yep.
And irritation comes before pain. So the way that we tell people to discern between irritation and pain is if on a scale of 1 to 10, because there is some subjectivity to it, it's a 4 out of 10 or less, you're fine. Mm-hmm. Keep going. If it's getting better from rep to rep, bout to bout, minute to minute, keep going. Mm-hmm. If the moment that you stop, like you're lifting a weight and that hurts, 4 out of 10, but as soon as you put it down, that's gone. Mm-hmm. You're good. Keep going. 24 to 48 hour window afterwards, there's no focal discomfort. You're not pointing to a single spot and saying it hurts here.
Yeah.
That's the difference between, to me, soreness and like this whole area right here is bothering me.
Right, yeah.
That's how we try to help people understand the difference between that's what you're supposed to feel mm-hmm. and this is what we need to do further investigation. It doesn't even mean something's wrong. And what we find is that when we have that conversation with people, we see this dropping of the shoulders and a huge exhale. Mm-hmm. And they're able to start doing things they couldn't do before. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that in a clinical setting?
So when patients ask me about that, I usually, I'll make that discernment between like soreness and pain. So soreness, I'll say a lot of, like with physical therapy, for example, I'll say you should walk away feeling like you exerted yourself. You should walk away feeling some soreness. But anything that sharp pain that makes you stop in your tracks or makes you not unable to keep going, then that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. But feeling some soreness when you do that, that's fine. And I usually kind of, sharp, I sort of say, is like a sharp, does it stop you from doing what you're doing? Are you, is it something that kind of really is sort of shocking to you in the moment? That's different than like, I have generalized soreness. Like, mm-hmm. is it more of a focal thing where you can point to that is sharp, or is it more of like a generalized aching? And, I often will tell people like that's, you want to feel a little bit of that. Mm-hmm. You want to, that's not a bad thing. You should be looking for that to know if you're actually activating the muscles you want to be activating. So in general, I'll tell people that they actually should be kind of be seeking it out. Or that if they never feel that, then that maybe their treatment is kind of missing the point.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't want to be the point. Or I say, if you don't want to be the point where you're like laid up for 2-3 days after, if mm-hmm. you find that you're like can't do stuff or you're like significantly altering your activities in the days after, then maybe something needs to be adjusted. So usually that's kind of how I make that.
I imagine that's freeing for patients.
Yeah, I think, again, it's like this fear of intensity, this fear of discomfort, and it's like, no, you have to feel that. Mm-hmm. You kind of have to feel that know that you're improving. They're unaware that they should be feeling that, I'll have people that want their glutes to get stronger, and it's like, they say, oh, yeah, we did all this stuff, and it's like, did you ever feel it there? Did you ever feel that muscle activate? And they're like, well, no, it hurts somewhere else. I go, okay, so we missed where we're supposed to be. So, I often will tell people to kind of seek that out a bit. It's within reason, obviously. But
was there a question that you think I needed to ask you and didn't that would give people more of a story?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I'll take it. I imagine one of those gym owners you were talking about before, the older mm-hmm. population that you go to 2-3 times a week is Bernie at CrossFit Sanctuary.
Yes, I love Bernie, yeah.
So shout out to Bernie. I used to love working with Bernie when we did the events that he came to.
I mean, they're in CrossFit Sanctuary. They're convenient. They're located very close to my offices. Mm-hmm. So we've actually had some staff events. I've been able to get my office crew over there. And they're definitely a location where they cater well to people of all abilities. So I enjoy sending people over there.
Again, that's another one of the places that I would endorse, on the podcast. If somebody is on Long Island looking for somebody who's going to be, like a place that's going to be a gentle approach to a hard thing.
Yeah.
I would tell you to seek out Bernie at CrossFit Sanctuary.
Definitely.
Amy, as always, I appreciate you coming on and having conversations with me.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure.
I love it.
Term prep. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Active Live Podcast. Please remember, give us a hand, rate it, review it wherever you listen to shows. We are on a mission to humanize the healthcare industry by professionalizing the fitness industry to empower the individual to live a life unlimited by the way that their body looks, feels, or performs. If you are inspired by that mission and want to jump on the wagon, find us anywhere. Active Life Professional on Instagram, Active Life RX on Instagram. Come to me personally at Dr. Sean Pestuch. We want to welcome you onto the train. We want you to be a part of the mission. We want to offer you the opportunity to pursue this right alongside us. We're inspired by your effort, and we hope to help you in your journey. Turn pro.